Chapter 40. Thursday next. A trip to Text Grand Central is a must for the technophile, and a day spent on one of the main Imagino Transference engine floors is not to be missed. A visit will dispel forever the notion that those at TGC do little to smooth out the throughputting of the story to the reader's imagination. Tours around the reader feedback loop are available on Tuesday afternoons, but owing to the sometimes hazardous nature of feedback, exposure is limited to 18 seconds. Bradshaw's Bookworld Companion, 15th edition. It took nearly an hour to find what we were looking for. Sandwiched between political thriller and spy thriller, and well within the condemned book's debris trail, was psychological thriller. The whole "Am I Really Thursday?" stuff I'd been laboring through over the past few days had all the hallmarks of a psycho-thriller plot device and made total sense of Thursday's obscure confusion-enlightenment sentence. Finding the genre, however, was harder. It was difficult to spot from the air, as a sense of ambiguity blurred the edges of the small genre, and with good reason. Psychological was another rogue genre, where nothing could be taken at face value, trusted, or even believed, a genre whose very raison d'etre was to confuse and obfuscate. Often accused of harbouring known felons and offering safe haven to deposed leaders of other rogue genres, psychothriller could never be directly indicted, as nothing was ever quite what it seemed, a trait it shared with others that also had a tenuous hold on reality, such as creative accounting and lies to tell your partner when she/he finds underwear in the glove box. We found it by using our small onboard textual sieve to home in on a trail of confused reader feedback, and Sprocket expertly brought us in for a landing at the corner of Forsyth and Ludlam. We walked across a vacant lot to the unfenced border of psychological thriller. The weather, naturally, was atmospheric. On the thriller side of the border, the skies were clear, but across in psychological, there seemed to be an impenetrable wall of rain-soaked air. Juris Fiction had considerately posted signs along the border at regular intervals, warning trespassers to stay away or potentially suffer lethal levels of bewilderment. Only fools or the very brave ventured into psychological thriller alone. "Mom," said Sprocket, his eyebrow flickering alarm. "Problems?" "You find me hugely embarrassed."
"What is it? You need winding?"
"No, ma'am, it's the damp. Humans might fear viruses and old age, two things with which cog-based life forms have very little issue, but when it comes to corrosion, honey, magnets, and damp, I'm afraid to say I must warn you that a rebuild might be necessary, and spare parts are becoming scandalously expensive."
"It's all right," I said. "Just wait for me here." I stepped across. Inside psychological thriller, it was raining and night. The cold wind lashed my face and drove the rain into every crevice of my clothes, until within a very short period I was soaked through. The tops of the trees swayed dangerously in the wind, and every now and then there was a flash of lightning, followed by a splintering crack and the sound of a tree falling with a muffled crash somewhere in the dark. I moved on, occasionally sinking ankle-deep in the marshy ground. After a few hundred yards, I came to a small clearing of tussock grass, pools of brackish water, and a scattering of broken branches. On the far side, partially immersed in ooze, were the remains of a trans-genre taxi. The front had been staved in, the engine torn out, and the bodywork rippled and bent. Scraps of tree had been caught in the side mirrors as the taxi tore through the foliage on its way down. While I stared at the mangled wreck, the lightning flashed, and on the side was painted "No Tips," and farther along, 1517. It was Thursday's cab. I hurried round to see if anyone had survived. I was perhaps in too much haste, and swiftly sank up to my thighs in the fetid waters. I extricated myself with a considerable amount of grunting and swearing, and finally made my way to the taxi and peered in. The rear door was open, and the empty back seat scattered with papers, mostly about geology and a racy novel. The mediocre Gatsby was still sitting in the front seat, impaled on the steering column. He had been killed by a bad case of selective nostalgia. For some peculiar reason, all trans-genre taxis were modelled on the 1950s yellow checker cab design, at a time when safety standards were non-existent and fatal accidents embraced by Detroit with an alarming level of indifference. The hose down the dash and sell it to the next man attitude pervaded all the way into the book world, and not without good reason. In here, there was always a battle between nostalgia and safety, and nostalgia usually won. I stood up, pushed the wet hair out of my eyes, and tried to think what might have happened. As I stared in turn at the taxi, the empty back seat, and the remains of mediocre Gatsby, I suddenly had a thought. The rear door had been open when I got here. I looked around to see where I might have gone if I'd found myself unceremoniously dumped in the middle of a rainy swamp at night, possibly injured and very alone. I took the most obvious way out of the marsh and managed to find a path to higher ground. I followed the trail as best I could, and after stumbling through the forest for a few hundred yards in a generally uphill direction, I came across a doorway in a high brick wall, upon the top of which were the remains of a corroded electrified fence. Attached to the brick wall was a weathered wooden board, telling me to keep away from the Wilfred D. Akron Home for the Criminally Insane. If I had been real, I would doubtless have been more nervous than I was, but this was psychological thriller, and secure hospitals for the criminally insane were pretty much a dime a dozen, and rarely secure. I found myself in a small and very overgrown graveyard, the lichen-encrusted stones leaning with a frightening level of apparent randomness. I moved through the graveyard towards a mausoleum built of brick and stone, but in an advanced state of decay. If I had crash-landed here in the taxi, this is where I would have sought shelter. The double doors were bronze, heavy, and streaked green with age. There was a hole about 3 feet wide in the middle, so both doors looked as though they had a semicircle cut from each. My foot knocked against something. It was Thursday's well-worn pistol, her name engraved on the barrel. The hole in the locked doors had been blasted out for access. I was getting close. I carefully climbed through the hole and pushed my rain-soaked hair from my face. It was light enough to see, and below the broken skylight was a table that had once held flowers, but was now a collection of dirty vases. There were a few personal items scattered about: a picture of Landon and the kids, a £5 note, an Acme Carpets ID.
"It's difficult to know sometimes who you are, isn't it?"
I turned to see the small figure of a girl, aged no more than 8, standing in a shaft of light that seemed to descend vertically from the roof.
"Hello, Jenny," I said. "Did anyone figure you out?" she asked, "hiding in plain sight, as the written version of you. How did the written Thursday feel about taking a back seat for a while? And where is she, by the way?"
"I'm really Thursday?" I asked.
"Oh, yes," replied Jenny with a chuckle. "Doesn't it all seem so obvious now?"
2 days ago, I might have believed her.
"No,"
I replied.
"You see, I spoke to Landon, and he told me I vanished from the real world, as a good book person might do. So don't give me any of your psychological thriller bullshit."
"Oh, okay," said Jenny, thinking quickly.
"How about this? You're actually just witnessing..."
"Don't even think to try owl-creaking me. And while we're at it, you're not Jenny." Is she giving you any trouble? Said another voice I recognized.
A little, said Jenny.
And Sprocket, or a reasonable facsimile of him, appeared from out of the shadows. I sighed. My mother would be appearing next, and then probably myself. It was all becoming a little tedious.
Did you try her on the You Really Are Thursday twist ending? Asked Sprocket.
She didn't buy it. I tried the It's All in Your Last Moment Before Dying gambit, too.
Ersatz Sprocket thought for a moment. What about the You're actually a patient in a mental hospital, and we've been enacting all this to try to find out if you killed Thursday? That usually works.
Goodness, said Faux Jenny. I'd clean forgotten about that one.
And now that you've told me, I said, I'm hardly likely to go for it, am I?
Well done, Einstein, said Faux Jenny to her partner in a sarcastic tone. Any other bright ideas?
Ersatz Sprocket looked at me, then at Faux Jenny, then tried to telegraph an idea across to her in a very lame portrayal of someone being in a shower.
Oh, said Faux Jenny, as she twigged to what he was talking about. Good idea.
But I had figured it out, too.
You wouldn't be thinking about pulling a Bobby Ewing on me, would you?
And they both swore under their breath.
Well, grumbled Ersatz Sprocket with a shrug, that's me clean out of ideas.
And as I watched, they reverted to the strangely misshapen shape-changers who skulked around Psychological Thriller, hoping to trap unwary travellers into thinking they had once been homicidal maniacs, but now had amnesia, and all their previous visions depicted in horrific nightmares were actually recovered memories. In a word, they were a pair of utter nuisances.
"Thank heavens for that," I said. "Let's get down to business. Where is Thursday, and why didn't you report her presence here to Jurisfiction?" "We send so many conflicting and utterly bizarre plot lines out of the genre that everyone ignores us," said Shifter once Jenny, sadly. "I think Jurisfiction set our messages to auto-ignore."
"For good reason," I replied. "You're only marginally less troublesome than conspiracy."
"That's why Thursday asked us to transmit all those ambiguities direct to you. We were hoping you'd get here sooner than this. We peppered you with as much confusion as we could, but you didn't pick it up."
If I'd been Thursday, I would have. Being confused over identity had been a mainstay of Psychological Thriller for years. I had a lot to learn. "I'm new to this."
"You'll get the hang of it."
"I hope not. Where is she?"
"In that antechamber."
I turned and followed a short corridor to where there was a small room off the main mausoleum. It was obviously where the shape-changers usually lived, as there were posters of face-ache on the wall. They had given over the one bed to Thursday, who was lying on her back. The room was lit by a gas lantern, and by its flickering jet I could see that she was in a bad state. There was an ugly bruise on her face, and one eye was red with blood. She moved her head to look at me, and I saw her eyes glisten. "Hey," I said.
"Hey,"
said Thursday in a weak voice. I placed my hand on her forehead. It was hot. "How are you feeling?" I asked. She gave a faint smile and shrugged, but she winced when she did it.
"Landon,"
she whispered. "He's fine. Kids, too."
"Tell them."
"Tell them yourself." I stood up. I had to get her to Grey's Anatomy as soon as possible. There was an umbrella in a stand at the door, and I picked it up. "Thursday, I'm going to fetch someone who can carry you out of here. My butler. I'll be 10 minutes.
"You have a butler?" she managed.
"Yes," I replied in a chirpy voice, in order to hide my concern. "Everyone needs a butler."